Here's a special offer for Issues Etc. listeners. For any size gift during the Easter season, we'll send you a CD of an Easter and Ascension sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between Easter Sunday and Ascension Day, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Easter and Ascension sermons.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak, a vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser, a misogynistic, homophobic, racist, malevolent bully.
That is Richard Dawkins, a famous new atheist. The new atheists are kind of belligerent, especially toward God. And one wonders why. Although, if Dawkins is right, I mean, if he's actually right about the God of the Old Testament, that would also be the God of the New Testament, then why would anyone believe in this God? It just doesn't seem to make any sense. And that's kind of where the new atheists are. They just wonder out loud, in sometimes rather loud tones, why anyone would be so foolish, so stupid, for lack of a better word, to believe in a God, if he's right. The new atheists have their own way of going at this. It's a little different than the old atheists. We're going to talk about new atheism in the last half hour of this Monday afternoon's program. Mary Eberstadt joins us. She's a research fellow at the Hoover Institute, contributing writer to First Things magazine, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Loser Letters, a comic tale of life, death, and atheism. Mary, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
I mean, in reading your book, you obviously are able to crawl into the mind of the average new atheist. Why do you think most atheists are atheists?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, of course, what they would say is that they are atheists because that's what any reasonable person would do when faced with the evidence. But as I point out in the course of the book, actually plenty of very reasonable people, some of the greatest minds in history, in fact, have found room for theism in their own lives. So it can't just be that reason is on the side of atheism and against theism. There are more interesting things going on. I think one possible motivation is not wanting to live up to the Judeo-Christian moral code. I think lots of people have found, maybe most people have found, that it's a very difficult code to live by. And somewhere deep inside all of us is a certain laziness, you know, and we might wish this thing weren't true. We might not want to have it as our own personal guide to life. We might want our lives to be easier as they would be if we ignore the thing. But I think the question of motivation is a deep one, and that's part of why I wrote The Loser Letters, was to explore what real-life factors might turn a person toward atheism.
How much influence do you think the new atheists are having on religion and culture?
A lot. I don't think the danger is so much that they will create generations of atheists as belligerent as they are. I think the danger is more that in a time that is rapidly secularizing anyway, at least in certain elite circles, the danger is that this belligerent atheism has a kind of trickle-down effect where people who haven't really thought about the issue can just say, well, you know, there was a lot of furor and argument about God a few years back, and the new atheists carried the day, didn't they? They had all these books. You know, and I think the danger is that people will just sort of unreflectively accept this as a reasonable way of telling the truth about the world, when in fact there are lots and lots of errors, you know, intellectual, logical, historical, and otherwise in these books, as I'm trying to bring attention to.
Why the terms you chose as you kind of crawled into the persona of a recent convert from Christianity to atheism, especially the term for God, loser?
Well, God is known in the book as loser. It's one of many upside-down features of this satire. He's called Loser, capital L. And the reason is that, as she says, as A.F. Christian, the lead character, says at one point, you know, if everything the new atheists are saying is true, then God is like the biggest loser of all time because he's sold everybody this bill of goods, and then he turns out not even to exist. And all through history, people have been worshiping him and trying to discern what he's saying. But, you know, if the new atheists are right, he's not even there. So that's why he's called Loser, capital L.
And why dull and bright for essentially believers and unbelievers?
Well, Brights was handed to me by the new atheists for a long time now. They've been referring to atheists as Brights, capital B. So all I did was take the logic of that a step further and say, well, if being an atheist is to be a bright, then it must be, by corollary, that to be a believer is to be a dull, capital D-U-L-L. So again, throughout the book, that's how A.F. Christian refers to the believers. She calls them the dulls, following the lead of, you know, calling the atheists the brights.
Do you think that atheists tend to think through their position to its logical conclusion, apply it evenly across the board to situations either philosophical or moral?
Well, I think that there's a fair amount of running away from certain implications of their thought. You know, for example, if what they say is true, and we don't have any reliable guide to ethical behavior, we're probably in a lot of trouble. In fact, we are in a lot of trouble because people can just do what they want to do with impunity, and a lot of the time what people want to do is bad, bad for other people, bad for people weaker than they are. This is one of the points I'm trying to make in the book. For example, I'll give a concrete example. Let's talk about the sexual revolution for a minute. Now, all of the new atheists, like all of the old atheists, have the same exact line about the sexual revolution. They believe that it's very important to free up people from this, you know, terrible old moral code that keeps them unliberated and, you know, keeps them on the farm, as it were. So they talk about all this as if this hasn't been tried, you know, as if the sexual revolution hasn't been going along for a good half century now. And what are the results? Well, some of the results are certainly greater freedom, but also broken families and STDs and people who kind of bounce through life with one monogamous partner after another, after another, after another. You know, there is an empirical record about what the sexual revolution has wrought. And so when the new atheists go on as if all we need is more liberation, it's fair to hold up that record and say, wait a minute, you know, this is, you got your way. We've had 50 years of you guys getting your way, and this is what it looks like, and it isn't pretty.
You point out, kind of by way of satirical warning, that while the atheists may have some ground to stand on in pointing out what bad acts done in the name of Christianity throughout history, they should be careful about boasting of the good deeds done in the name of atheism. Why?
Well, because they distort the record so badly. I mean, it's their presentation of the role of Christianity in history is such a caricature. I mean, yes, it's fair to say that a certain number of people died in the Inquisition, for example, as atheists are always saying. In fact, they just love to talk about the Inquisition. They talk about the Inquisition as if there weren't many millions and millions and millions of more people killed in the 20th century in the name of explicitly atheist ideologies like communism and fascism. And I think it's fair to try and turn that historical record around, or at least, you know, bring it to the light. There's something disproportionate about their emphasis on the crimes and sins of Christian history. That there are crimes and sins in Christian history, nobody would dispute, you know, least of all a Christian. But it's fair to ask what their side of the ledger looks like, because their side is horrific. And I'm not saying that the new atheists endorse the Holocaust or anything like that. I'm saying, once again, there has been empirical evidence of what happens when explicitly atheist-minded people get to run big sections of the world. And what happens, to judge by the 20th century, can be really very bad.
Do you think atheists are willing to admit this?
Obviously not. No, instead they say there's no evidence that people will behave worse if we just throw out the Christian rule book. But here again, you know, evidence can be a compelling thing to to diffuse this all a little bit, let me give another example. The way the new atheist talks, you would think there is no difference in behavior from people who believe in God and people who don't. But in fact, some very compelling empirical work has been done on this very question by an economist named Arthur Brooks, whose work you may have heard of. He has, over the course of a couple of books, traced the phenomenon of charitable giving in America. Who gives to charity? And not just charitable giving, but also volunteering and other kinds of, community-minded behaviors. And what he has found, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is that people who believe in God are more likely to have volunteered their time, they're more likely to have given blood, they give far more in charitable donations to all kinds of causes than people who don't believe in God. So, what does this mean? It doesn't mean that people who believe in God are de facto good and people who don't are de facto bad. But it does suggest that here we have another case of where this atheist claim that belief in the Christian God does not have an effect on how one lives one's life has been undermined by the empirical evidence. So again, just as part of setting the record straight, that's one of the things that I get at in one of the letters.
Okay, we've talked a bit about this. We'll come back to it on the other side of the break. One thing that is fundamental to both the atheists and the new atheists' claim vis-a-vis Christianity is that they hold the rational high ground, that logic is on our side, they say, and that if one simply applies empirical evidence, if one simply applies one's basic reason and logic, it is not logical to believe in God, and it's unnecessary, they would contend. But they claim the rational high ground over against believers and especially against Christians. When we come back, we'll see whether or not they actually do hold that ground. Mary Eberstadt is our guest of the Hoover Institute. Stay tuned.
By which we measure our pain.
What makes Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church in Freeburg, Illinois so special? Our new members talk about the family atmosphere, the welcoming people, and the outstanding music. But most importantly, you'll be confronted with your sin and comforted with the assurance that Jesus has removed that sin so that you can live each day as His baptized and forgiven child. Christ Our Savior Lutheran Church is at 612 North State Street in Freeburg, Illinois. Sunday worship is at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible classes at 10:20 a.m. Call 618-539-5664.
The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for May, is a devotional resource called Stark's Prayer Book. You'll find prayers for patience, strength, sickness, thanksgiving, dying, and more in Stark's Prayer Book. This devotional resource costs $19.99 plus shipping and handling. Browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, Stark's Prayer Book.
Treadmill for the Mind. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues, Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
The Gospels are written a great deal after the events they purport to describe. They contradict each other on every important aspect of the life story. There isn't a trustworthy word in any of the Gospels that you could remotely say was historical evidence.
That's Christopher Hitchens among the new atheists. And nothing escapes the new atheists' blasts of deconstruction or recrimination. The old atheists were respectful of many things within the pale of Christianity. By comparison, the new atheists, not so much. We're talking about the new atheists. Mary Eberstadt is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. It's Monday afternoon, May the 3rd. Mary is research fellow at the Hoover Institute, a contributing writer to First Things magazine. She's author of several books, including her latest, The Loser Letters, A Comic Tale of Life, Death, and Atheism. Mary, do the new atheists or atheists in general hold the rational high ground?
Do they hold the rational high ground? I don't think so. I think there are a number of logical fallacies in their thinking. I try to point some of them out in the book. In the book, my protagonist, A.F. Christian, is, as you know, converting enthusiastically to atheism and explaining why. And one of the things she tries to do is to tell the new atheists to downplay their weaknesses, because, after all, if their movement is to grow, they need to be aware of where they're vulnerable. One of the places they're vulnerable is in logic. For example, every one of these guys is out there making the argument that the fact that there are so many different religions in the world somehow proves that all of them are false. And, you know, that's illogical. That inference doesn't follow at all. As my character says, you know, that's like saying just because you have 12 pairs of Manolo Blahnik shoes, you can't figure out which one to put with your cheetah leather miniskirt. See, if you put it in those terms, everybody can see that there's a logical fallacy there. But the new atheists have been out peddling the same fallacy throughout all of these books, and it seems fair to call them on it.
You end talking a little bit about natural law, but not in just kind of an abstract way, but through your protagonist in a very concrete way, if I'm not mistaken, about the qualms, the pangs of conscience that I assume she suffers. Talk about that, if you would.
Yes, I think, you know, there are a lot of things about the way human beings are that are a problem for atheism. Atheism can't explain a great deal of our motivation. I mean, they try to with evolutionary psychology and kind of making up stories about this and that. But one of the real big stumbling blocks, I think, is the existence of human guilt. The fact of human guilt, the fact that there is an inborn sense in people, obviously stronger in some people than in others, but there's an inborn sense to judge things right and wrong and to feel that one has done right or done wrong. You know, this feeling has been used by natural law theorists to, it's taken as vindication, actually, for the idea of a deity who put this feeling inside us all. But one thing about that feeling of guilt is that it doesn't make any sense in evolutionary terms at all. Because why should an organism, if we are what they say and we're just, you know, bipeds who are almost there with the chimps, why should we feel guilt? What would be the evolutionary advantage of that? Well, why shouldn't we just go around feeling no guilt? Because then we could do what we want with impunity. That would seem to make more sense from a Darwinian survival point of view. So in putting this phenomenon of guilt into this character, who I think is a very believable young lady, the kind of person most of us have known, she finally has to face the fact that part of her motivation for being drawn to atheism has to do with this feeling of guilt. And she meditates on that a lot in the end of the book, as you know, because that, for her, is the one thing that she can't get over.
What do you think, if there were such a convert to atheism who was actually querying the brightest lights of new atheism with these kind of honest questions, both philosophical and personal, do you think that even the brightest of the new atheists would even entertain the questions?
Well, I wish so. My favorite email that I've gotten so far about the book came from someone who said he had always been an atheist, but after reading the book, he wasn't so sure. I'd love to hear more of that kind of response. But, you know, this book is, among other things, an exploration of why people believe and how people believe. And the way the new atheists tell it, you know, we all just sit in a corner and think deep thoughts and come out, you know, against God's existence. But this isn't really what happens. I think what really happens is like what happens in the book, where there is a character, and she's had certain experiences in her life. They're very recognizable experiences. Millions of other people have had them. You know, she goes to college, she loses her faith, and little by little, it's factors like these about her behavior and her past that play into her desire to believe in atheism. And I think that's true of people generally, too. I think they're not, we don't, any of us, kind of sit around like philosophers and, you know, piece this thing out on our own. Whether we believe, how we believe, whether we go to church, these things have a lot to do with other factors in our lives, starting with our personal behavior.
It sounds as though you've kind of touched a nerve in atheism. I mean, I hope I'm not oversimplifying it, in saying essentially that at the root of so much atheism is, in fact, kind of the impulse to shake your fist at God. Not really a denial of God, but a virtual denial of God.
It is very interesting to me that although atheism has obviously been around for a long time, the new atheism, you know, the specific references to Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and, you know, that whole new crop of people, those people are different from the older atheists in that they are really very angry. They're two things. They're very angry and they're very contemptuous of believers. And anyone who doesn't think this has obviously not read their books, because that is what their books are about. And that's why I quote them so much, because I want to bring out those two features. Now, those are interesting facts, because if the new atheists are right, then you'd think they could just bask in their own victory and go home happy about it and, you know, feel sorry for all the people in the world who are such fools that they're religious believers. But that's not how they are. That you really get the sense they're not going to be happy until they have ridiculed every last Christian out there in the public square and, you know, shaken not one fist but two fists at God. That's what the books read like. Why does all that energy have to go into denying something if it's as obvious as they say it is? That's the interesting question. And I think that, you know, the only answer is because it is not as easy to deny as they say it is. That's the whole point.
Finally, then, before we let you go, you have written recently about the new HBO film about Jack Kevorkian, Dr. Death, titled You Don't Know Jack. What did you think of the film?
Well, I thought it was the most sort of preposterous combination of stunning talent on the one side. I mean, you have Al Pacino playing Dr. Death. You have this movie shot by Barry Levinson, who's won all kinds of awards, fantastic director. You have an all-star cast for backup. And all of this in the service of misrepresenting the actual record of this person and what he stands for in the public debate. So I was trying just to bring a few of the facts about that record to light and to set it straight. But it's a really sad experience to sit through that movie and all of that talent and to realize that they got it about 100% wrong.
Mary Eberstadt is a research fellow at the Hoover Institute, contributing writer to First Things magazine, author of several books, including her latest, The Loser Letters, a comic tale of life, death, and atheism. You can purchase The Loser Letters under the Listen on Demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Mary, thank you again. Thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd. It was fun.
Well, tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Dr. John Warwick Montgomery about the alleged discovery of Noah's Ark. He's actually been on Mount Ararat, done a little looking around himself. And then we'll discuss a gay marriage course being offered at no place other than Seton Hall University. That's a Roman Catholic institution, and they're offering a gay marriage course. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris will be our guest also tomorrow on Issues Etc. We can debate with the new atheists, and the debate is one that we ought to gladly engage in. We have to know where they stand and be able to at least attenuate some of their belligerence against believers and against Christianity. But in the end, what will really be the difference is not coming out on top in the debate. In the end, what Christianity is about is not its history, its utility, whether or not it produces a better life or a better society. Those things certainly can be argued, but that's not the essence of Christianity. The essence of the Christian faith is Jesus himself. Sooner or later, the new atheists have to deal with that guy, who he is, who he claims to be, and what he has done. For the essence of Christianity, the heart and center of it, are the claims made by that one man who claimed not to be just man and God, the Son of God, who claimed that his death would actually be the atoning sacrifice for the sins of the world, who went into death with that very proclamation and promise attached, and promised he would rise from the dead. And by golly, his disciples said he did. The very same Jesus. That's who the new atheists and all atheists ultimately need to deal with. Jesus himself, the Savior of the world, the heart and center of the Christian faith. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.